Thank you, Paul and Dr. Bonicelli, and good luck with your effort as provost of the Houston Baptist University. His goal is to turn that university into a Grove City College or a Hillsdale. We can say it here because we are within friends, you know, but good luck.
Send money.
Our next speaker is a very good friend of the free market movement and great champion of law and economics also. José Luis Sardón is director of the Law and Economics Program at the Universidad Peruana de Ciencias Aplicadas, graduate school in Lima, Peru. This is a private university in Lima, Peru. Prior to this, he was the executive editor of the journal Debate. He has been professor at many prestigious universities. Today, to answer Juan Javier del Granado and Liero's comment, today he's editor of the Revista de Economía y Derecho, the Journal on Law and Economics that is produced at that university, and my foundation is pleased to be able to support modestly this wonderful academic journal. He received the first prize in the Peruvian National Press Contest in 1984. He's an arbiter at the Center of International and National Arbitration at the Lima Chamber of Commerce, wrote many, many books, and I think this is a great opportunity to welcome with a round of applause, José Luis Sardón.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am delighted to be here at the Philadelphia Society for this discussion of the cycles on liberalization and authoritarianism in Latin America. I thank Bill Campbell for inviting me to this meeting. I would like to begin by explaining a terminological precision, as I believe that liberalization should not be opposed to authoritarianism. Liberalization is a term with economic content, authoritarianism one with political content. Liberalization consists of the deregulation of markets and their opening to competition. The opposite of liberalization would be to establish legal and bureaucratic barriers for market access. Authoritarianism, on the other hand, consists of the suppression of elections and the freedoms of expression, assembly, and association. It can be said that the opposite of authoritarianism is democracy, if it is understood that democracy is defined not only by having elections, but also by respecting civil liberties previously pointed out. The term illiberal democracies, coined by Farid Zakaria, refers to governments of democratic origin but with an authoritarian behavior. In Latin America, the best example of this type of government is the government of Hugo Chavez, whose mandate as president of the República Bolivariana of Venezuela has been approved of several times at the ballot boxes. However, this government has flagrantly violated the freedom of speech in its country. Illiberal democracies are also characterized by its interventionist policies, which pretend to replace market decision-making by the infinite wisdom of the great boss. According to this definition, Chavez's government also qualifies as an illiberal democracy because of its nationalization of private enterprises and because Chavez has gone to the extreme of dictating the prices of essential goods using his radio and TV program. In Chavez's case, political authoritarianism and economic statism go hand in hand. However, this is not always the case. In fact, in Latin America, there have been authoritarian governments that have liberalized the economies of their countries. Examples are the governments of Augusto Pinochet in Chile, 1973-1989, and of Alberto Fujimori in Peru, 1990-2000. These governments ended notable inflationary processes, opened their markets to competition, and privatized public enterprises. In Chile, Pinochet found an annual inflation rate of 362%. When he left office, it was 17%. In Peru, Fujimori found an annual inflation rate of 7,482%. When he left office, it was 4%. Additionally, Pinochet lowered the average tariffs for imports from 94% to 15%. In Fujimori's case, he lowered this average tariff from 66% to 14%. Does this mean that economic policies are not linked to the political nature of the regimes from which they emerge? Does politics not shape economic policies? From my point of view, I consider that economic policies are relatively autonomous from political regime from which they flow from. Economic policies depend on the economic education of the rulers, and in a democracy also from the ruled. Specifically, economic liberalization derives from the understanding of the principles upon which a free society, a free economy is based: property rights and competition. Nothing stops economic liberalization when both rulers and ruled are clear about its importance. However, the institutionalization of a free economy usually goes hand in hand with the establishment of certain kind of political regime. This kind of regime is the one that I will call moderate here. Moderate regimes, either a regime of a dominant party or better yet, one of a two-party system, are more associated with the affirmation of economic freedom than extreme regimes are, either a personal regime or a multi-party system one. We will better understand the link that exists between economics and politics if we start by classifying political regimes based on their degree of openness, competition, and pluralism as expressed in their party systems. Political parties are the first level of political organization of a society. For this reason, the kind of party system is of the highest economic and social significance. Two out of the four subtypes of political regime that I have mentioned can be definitely considered democratic, the two-party and the multi-party systems. However, the emergence of economic freedom is only associated with the first one. Multipartidism, at least in the context of a republican and presidential system of government, prevents the affirmation of the rule of law and therefore of economic freedom. In the last 50 years, Brazil, Bolivia, Ecuador, and Peru have had no less than six different political parties that managed to reach power. These parties were not only meaningful, since they were real options for reaching power, but also effective, as they in fact constituted governments. However, almost all of them arose in electoral circumstances, and after leaving office, they disappeared from the political scene. In Peru, for example, both the Unión Nacional Rodriguista and the Movimiento Democrático Peruano ruled the countries in the 50s, but vanished at the end of the 70s. The same has happened with most of the parties in other countries that I mentioned before. Latin American political parties are very volatile. Political scientist Michael Kopech counted more than 1,200 parties in the congresses of the nine largest Latin American nations during the 20th century. This situation has deep consequences. Two-party systems are associated with the affirmation of the rule of law because they provide what game theory refers to as repetitive games, bringing incentives for political actors to have a long-term perspective and developing strategies of prestige. On the contrary, multi-party systems generate non-repetitive games, which thus provide incentives for developing predatory strategies. In a two-party system, the party in power definitely knows that in the next election it can become the opposition, but in the following one it can return to power. In a multi-party system, on the contrary, the party in government knows that in the next election it cannot become the opposition, but that it will go to jail. In fact, in the last 20 years, several Latin American presidents have ended up in prison or as fugitives from justice. Some Latin American countries have had two-party systems and nevertheless have fallen into populism. They were not able to generate a long-term perspective and a comprehension of free market decision-making mechanisms. This is explained by the fact that these two-party systems did not spring off from their systems of representation, but were imposed from the top down by agreements of their main political parties in order to limit competition. Colombia provides us with an example of in the second half of the 20th century. There, in the early 60s, conservatives and liberals agreed to alternate the power for the following 16 years. Evidently, I am not praising this kind of fake two-party system. The consequences of multipartyism are so terrible that in comparison with it, even regimes of a dominant party are preferred, as long as the regimes are really a system of a dominant party and not one of a hegemonic party. The difference between these two systems is having competitive elections. In the first case, the dominance of one single party is the result of a majoritarian decision of the electorate. In the second, it is the result of some kind of political maneuver. Today, we find examples of a dominant party in East Asia, the Liberal Democratic Party of Japan, the Kuomintang of Taiwan, the Popular Action Party of Singapore, and even the Communist Party of China. Obviously, Japan is closer in having a competitive political system than China. However, it should be recognized that in China, since Deng Xiaoping, there has been a pacific and ordered alternation of persons in power. This regime of a dominant party cannot be compared with the personal regimes of Kim Jong-il in North Korea, Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, or Fidel Castro in Cuba. In this subtype of extreme regime, it is impossible to consolidate the rule of law, since the will of one single person, owner of the absolute truth, is the law. The central problem of Latin America is that its political process oscillates between one extreme regime and the other. Latin American countries are trapped in the vicious circle of going from multipartyism to a personal regime and to return from a personal regime to multipartyism. Peru offers the best example, where during the last four decades these two regimes have alternated. In the 60s, Peru has had a democracy with seven parties in Congress. Controlled by an opposition coalition, it devoted itself to censor the ministers of President Fernando Belaunde, thus ending up in having 167 ministers. This provoked the coup d'etat of 1968 and the establishment of a military government for the following 12 years. When Peru became a democracy again in 1980, it had an average of 10 parties in Congress during the whole decade. This situation contributed to having governments incapable of stopping terrorism and inflation, thus provoking Fujimori's cell coup of 1992. In this decade, Peru has returned to a democracy with an average number of 9 parties in Congress. In spite of it, things are going relatively well. Regarding the economic agents, it has generated trust by having rulers such as Alejandro Toledo and Alan Garcia, who, although coming from the center-left, deepened the economic policies of the previous decade. What is happening now in Peru is the same thing that happened in Chile in the 90s. However, the difference between Peru and Chile is that Chile already has a moderated regime. In some sense, this is a regime of a dominant party, since the government has been in the hands of one single group for many years. Nevertheless, in another sense, it is a two-party system, since there is an opposition of the right, which is relatively consolidated. In any case, in Chile, it is not possible for an anti-system candidate, such as Ollanta Humala in Peru, who almost became president in the Peruvian elections of 2006, to get into government. How do moderate political regimes emerge? Why are Latin American democracies, with the exception of Chile, multi-party regimes? The origin of Latin American multipartyism fundamentally comes from the system of representation with which they elect their Congress. Thus, the cycle of multipartyism and authoritarianism in Latin America can be stopped if the system is redesigned. The American two-party system is a product of the plurality or simple majority system based on single-member electoral districts from which members of the House of Representatives are elected. During the 20th century, as Theodore Roosevelt up to Ross Perot experienced it, it is practically impossible to break this two-party system since the electoral rules prevent a third party to have a significant congressional presence. The US is not the only case in which this system of representation has produced a two-party system. The same has occurred in England and Canada, and not to mention Germany and France, that after World War II established different modalities of the very same system. Clearly, the political reform allowed stabilizing the democratic process in these countries, overcoming the convoluted political experience previous to the war. Chile has distinguished itself from the rest of Latin America because of the fact that since 1989, the members of its Congress are elected in binominal electoral districts. It has a reductive effect on the number of political parties, similar to the one of the American single-member districts. In the last 20 years, Mexico, Bolivia, and Venezuela have tried variations of the plurality system. Like Germany, they established that one part of their congresses was to be elected individually, and the other part through lists. However, the difference with Germany is that they did not have parliamentary systems. Thus, the results were not encouraging, contributing to the empowerment of Hugo Chavez and Evo Morales. In 2006, Mexico was on the verge of getting its own dose of indigenous nationalism with Manuel López Obrador. Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru have persisted in the proportional representation system based on the election of congressmen in multi-member electoral districts. In Argentina, this system is known as Lista Sabana, in reference to the fact that it covers the reality of the country under a long list of candidates to Congress. Ecuador goes to the extreme of electing its congressmen in a single national district, thus getting the maximum of fragmentation. Why do Latin American countries use proportional representation? How do they justify it? As can be supposed, the great basis of proportional representation is the appeal of democracy, enshrined as not only the main, but the only principle of social organization. Proportional representation, it is argued, gives a more democratic representation, i.e., a more socially representative and ideologically diversity than the plurality system. The argument of social representativeness implies that it is not important that congressmen are honest and hardworking, but that they come from this or that race or sex. The American Academy, dominated by the left, and even the Inter-American Development Bank, supports this argument. It is argued that this system is adequate for plural societies like the ones in Latin America. The argument of ideological pluralism is older and more respectable, but in the end equally wrong too. It comes from a most unsuspected time and place, Victorian England. In the second half of the 19th century, John Stuart Mill, already in his romantic stage, advocated for the introduction of a proportional representation, arguing accordingly. This proposal was not taken into account in England, but was taken into account first in Belgium, and then in France and Germany. Latin America came afterwards. However, the lack of appreciation of the two-party system by the conservative and libertarian American thinkers has also contributed to this situation. Generally, this underlined the value of principles such as separation of powers or federalism without valuing this system. The only exception might be Samuel Huntington before his cultural furor. By the end, it should be pointed out that the effects of proportional representation are not limited to encouraging multipartidism. They affect the performance of the political system in an even more direct way, diluting any accountability. Because of this, congressmen render accounts more to the party's big bosses in charge of elaborating lists rather than to their own constituencies. It is not really a coincidence that there is no Spanish translation for the word accountability. Economist Torsten Persson from Sweden and Guido Tabellini from Italy have empirically demonstrated that there is an association between proportional representation and higher levels of public spending, tax pressure, and perception of corruption. On the contrary, by establishing a clear link of representation, single-member districts establish a stronger citizen control over politicians. These generate a virtuous circle of legitimacy and limited government. What will happen in Latin America? Until when will it be trapped in the cycles of multipartidism and authoritarianism? Will the contrast of Chile with the rest of the region be enough to inspire the other countries to undertake the political reform they so urgently need? I don't know, but I consider it important that at least the friends of economic liberty and political order who are gathered here are clear about this. Thank you very much.